Hi Sandra, today I'd like to talk about the Cooper-Pair cell complex.
Yes.
Cooper-Pair is a concept which was created in physics when it was realized that vortex dynamics is at the basis of a lot of stuff. And if something is connected by a vortex, the vortex has two sides, goes through the zero point, continues on the other side. And if you change the vortex on the one side, you will change the vortex on the other side. And then if you have a particle which has been generated by a vortex, or differently put, if you have a vortex which you can perceive as a particle, then if the one changes, then the other changes. And so from the physics and the mathematics, there's a couple of different ways that you can get to that idea. But essentially, it means that there are particles which are, in that sense, Siamese twins. Change the one, you change the other, wherever they are in the universe. So those are called Cooper pair particles. And it is that idea which people can look up in the publications here and there, so that they can familiarize with themselves with how that really works in depth. But what I'm picking up on is that notion of Cooper pairs as the fundamental principle in cells. And I came to that because evidently if your body starts with a single cell, the zygote, and as a single cell it then divides, which is the same as multiplies, it also differentiates, which is the same way as integrates, then something magical must happen in cell replication, which is different than what doctors look at. For doctors, they just see a cell on the petri dish, and then they see two cells, and that process continues. But what they forget to look at is that when you see that first cell divide, what is so special, and that zipping and unzipping of that cell, that 100 years later, the body is still coherent. So there is something in bodily coherence which requires a much deeper understanding of interconnectedness. And so the story, this story of Cooper pair cell complexes is about that. It simply takes the notion of a Cooper pair as it is described in physics for particles, and connects it to the notion of cell replication as it is used in medical views. So in that text, I then describe that if you look at the cell, it's always that first cell that is the key to everything, because on the one hand, that first cell originates from the sexual cell fusion of your parents, their parents, two of each, their parents, two of each. So if you go back far enough, you have more ancestors than there are people on Earth now. That brings me then to the conclusion that every human is a cell in the body of humanity. So the zygote is the first cell of the human as cell in the body of humanity. The zygote has been formed out of a fractal contraction of all of humanity into your first cell. And then that first cell expands, like an expanding fractal, and then forms the whole body. That means that the first cell, the zygote, is the turning point in a contracting fractal and an expanding fractal. And that's called the contracting vortex and the expanding vortex. In the mathematics, you just can use one kind of notation instead of the other and end up with the same finding. So the zygote is then a turning point within this contracting vortex and on the other side, the expanding vortex. And in that precise position, the cell then links the human in humanity. The zygote, however, is also connected to a different vortex, and that's the one of cell replication. I try to describe that always as the materials dissolve, the molecules evaporate, the atoms discharge, and then in phase space everything bounces back and doubles. So there is a very hard mirroring in phase space, and that mirroring in phase space, that inversion in phase space, is exactly what tetrionics is about. In tetrionics, if you flip a quantum, then you reverse the polarity, you reverse the magnetic, you reverse the rotation of the circular momentum. And it simply means that in that moment of reflection of the contracting vortex of the zygote, resulting in the expanding vortex of the now doubled zygote, something very fundamental happens in phase space itself. And that what is so fundamental in phase space is exactly what tetrionics describes as the essence of the quantum. You can see that it has different charges on either side. So the core of the story of the Cooper pair cell complex is right there. That if you look at what happens at the quantum level, you can see that the vortex comes in, it goes through the zero point in quantum space, and then it bounces back and forms two vortices, two cells, and then something is needed which medical doctors ignore, don't learn, don't study, and these are the laws of conservation. The conservation laws in physics are fundamental. They're crucial to many processes, and they're believed to be at the core of how in the universe everything connects. Actually, by the use of tetrionics, we can understand that at a much deeper level, but for now let's just leave it at the principles, at the conservation laws of physics as people tend to know them. I do recommend that they look into the tetrionics, deeper layers of that, because then you can suddenly see how they all connect and what the logic is behind it all. As the conservation laws apply, then one of the conservation laws is the law of conservation of momentum, which means that if the first cell has a cell cycle, which it does, then when the cell has replicated by division, which is multiplication, and differentiation, which is integration, then there are two cells. But that also means that there are two cell cycles. There are also two membranes. And in that new constellation, there is something else which has come in, which is the core of the work of Bert Vervain, who essentially says, without describing that in detail, that if the cell divides, then the internal cell cycle is externalized, just as the way that the first cell turns inside out on itself by this vortex, which has been described by Lawrence Edwards in his book, The Vortex of Life. So what Lawrence Edwards describes as the vortex of life is then the principle by which the first cell replicates and forms two cells. But it is also the principle by which the internal cell cycle then comes back out as two cell cycles. But by the law of preservation of momentum, that means that these two cell cycles need to be coupled in their rhythms and their rates and their rotations and everything. Bert Vervain then adds that when the cell turns inside out, that internal cell cycle is also turned inside out as the external cell cycle of the feed forward and the feedback loop. And this is really crucial because, as Bert Vervain shows, the continued coherence of the feed forward and feedback loops in the body, not just between these first two cells, but between all of the cells, all of the organs, And in fact, also, every human is a cell in the body of humanity. Between all of the humans, those are the principle by which the units are kept in unity. So the first cell, having divided, then has an external feed forward and feedback loop by which these two cells interconnect and are interlinked and interlocked, phase locked, but phase locked in such a way that 100 years later, all of the cells which have done the same internal cell cycle became external feed forward feedback cycle, that all of these loops are interlinked, interlocked, and interlooped, and together preserve the unity and the wholeness of the entire body. So there is something fundamental in the way that the law of conservation of momentum operates in the first cell turning inside out. So the law of conservation of momentum applies to going through the vortex of the cell turning in, turning outside in, and then from phase space turning inside out, and then coming back at two cells. Just to make something clear right at this point, which is important later, that the information which then goes through that zero point and comes back out again is what we call consciousness. So the information which is there in the first cell and is there again in the second cell has gone through that zero point. So consciousness is that information which can go from one system to the other, across the boundaries of the system, and as a result, link the system into the whole. There is a separate text in which I talk about the transition from Jesus to Christ. Jesus, also known as Yeshua, is the teacher. In India, they would call that Pundit, or the knowledge. And Christ, also known as Krishna, is about consciousness, or transcendental consciousness. So Jesus then refers to mind based on knowledge stored in memory. Christ refers to the capacity for learning, which builds up experiences in memory, but is outside of the body. So Jesus is confined to knowledge. Christ is not limited to what you know. And they're two parts of the same story. And this transition of one cell turning into two cells is very much connected to that preservation of consciousness from the one cell into the two cells, so that the local knowledge in the first cell has been turned inside out, but still operates, now that it's turned into two cells, in, let's call it, Christ consciousness, transcendental consciousness, and the non-local consciousness. So in the cell, we have this relationship between the local knowledge or the local structure and the non-local knowledge, the non-local structure. And in our body, of course, this is very essential because we have the physical body, which is material, but it is composed of molecules, which are composed of atoms, which are actually operated from phase space. And as Tatrionics describes it, everything that we perceive originates from phase space. From phase space, you can get the curdling of phase space into tetrahedral structures, which we call tetrions in the terminology of tetrionics. These tetrions are inert. They cannot change form. They're electrically charged on their surface, so they will move along with whatever quantum field changes there are, because the quantum field in tetrions is electromagnetic. And then out of these movements of the quantum fields acting on the tetrions then can curdle, cluster together. If the triangular surfaces of the tetrions having opposite charges can then bind with what's called the strong force. Likewise, rib to rib, they can bind if their charges are opposite in what's called the weak force. They can also connect tip to tip if the charges are opposite in what's called the derived force. And in this way, the tetrions can form tetrion clusters, which creates a whole subatomic particle zoo, as shown in tetrionics. Part of that subatomic particle zoo is then the proton, the neutron, and the electron. And these have become quite well known because the proton and the neutron, as tetrionics shows, they have exactly the same shape with the same number of tetrions inside of them. But the way that the tetrions are organized is differently, so that the proton has more positive charges on the outside. The neutron has a balanced plus and minus charge on the outside, so it's a neutral charge. But on one of the surfaces, the charges of the tetrions actually are the opposite of each other. And these surfaces can do a strong bonding and create a deuteron. And in that deuteron, at a combination of a proton and a neutron, is a gap into which an electron can fit. So when we look at the structure of the body, then we can see that it is composed of these deuterons in different clusterings called atoms. And that only shows how all of the atoms from 1 to 120 are organized in this manner. And say at the scope and scale of 120 of these deuterons together, they will form a double pyramidal shape. But it still means that these atoms are inert. They will do nothing from themselves. The only thing that can happen is that the electron can move in and out like bees from a beehive, and that the movement of the electrons in and out of these atoms is totally determined by the electromagnetic fields. Let me briefly connect to a different text which I'm writing at the moment, which is called The Four Light Fields in the Body, because these four light fields are, say, the surface of the quantum field underlying the light field. Einstein, from his perspective, said that there's the event horizon, which is also called the barrier of light. He says nothing can go faster than the speed of light. Actually, that was a mistake, because he didn't connect to the idea of the wave envelopes of the light ray. He was looking at the ray of light as like train wagons in a train, one wave after the other, after the other, after the other. And then in that perspective, he realized that the front end of the wave and the back end of the wave, that's where it stopped. But tetrionics shows that if you look into that light ray more coherently, more logically, you can see that the light ray actually has wave harmonics in it, and that these wave harmonics build a superstructure in which all of the wave nodes are also wave nodes of the wave harmonics. So the whole light ray is, let's say, anchored in place by the wave nodes being multiplexed. It's not just the one wave that goes through it, but at a double distance, there is the wave envelope of number two, then there's number three, number four, and then there's the wave harmonic of the whole length of the light ray. And all of these wave envelopes are part of the story. Einstein forgot that. Tetrionics adds that, and then you can see that the light ray as a whole, on the one hand, is so coherent that it's actually a laser beam, and tetrionics describes that as a Tesla wave. Constantine Mell calls it the scalar wave, but essentially it's the same, that the beginning and the end of the light ray are as if fixed. So what happens at the front end also happens at the back end, and you don't have to go through every step of the light ray. So things can go faster than the speed of light. But that becomes understandable only if you see that light is a part of a much larger electromagnetic spectrum. Physics knows that. We have the visible light, we have the infrared, the ultraviolet, and then we have the radio waves on either side of it. And the universe as a whole is an ocean of vibrating waves. The light shield or the light plane or the light veil is only one part of it. And so when Einstein says that that's as far as we can go, then that's simply because he didn't include the wave envelopes. In a separate story, I described that this transition between Jesus and Christ is actually based on what happens in the leading edge of that ray of light, because in that wave node, you don't have just the ending of the wave of that wave train, but also all of these other harmonics are there. So if you're in that space, these wave harmonics will already project forward, even though the wave had not been put in place yet. So that's also how you go through the barrier of light or the barrier of consciousness. And so when we look at the, coming back to the light, four light fields in the body, we can then see that the light field in the body that we are aware of is part of a much larger light field. And when we refer to the light field in the body, essentially, that describes how the quantum field operates these tetrons, which I referred to before. I mentioned that these tetrons then can create tetron clusters. The atoms are part of that, but the electrons in the atoms are part of that too. And so if the atoms move, it is because that electromagnetic quantum field moves, and the light field is just a part, a sheath, into that movement of that quantum field. When you understand that this is happening in the body, then it is also clear that there are four light fields, for the simple reason that the universe as a whole is the quantum field. And even before it is formed, before it starts to curdle and form tetrions, and then out of that comes the Van Oort gas cloud with the protons, the neutrons, and the electrons, out of which can come the electric charge discharges creating the ball lightnings, which we call the stars, out of which can come the drops of liquid sun frozen into space, which we call planets. So those are the four levels there, but the underlying basis of that all is the quantum field, which fills the whole of the universe. Our body is associated with light field too. So we have a local light field, which essentially is our field of consciousness, our local consciousness, like a drop in the ocean, a quantum field within a quantum field. That's what Niels Bohr was referring to. That's where the Copenhagen Convention went wrong. Heisenberg and Schrödinger and the other guys had already realized that wave mechanics is much more fundamental than particle physics, and we should replace quantum mechanics by quantum holography. But in the Copenhagen Convention, they turned that the other way around and said essentially two things. One of them is the universe is particular instead of holographic, and the other one was the observers are separate from the universe instead of integral part of it. And most of the problems which we have had in science from that time on, planetary pollution, political manipulations, and all that, are based on this view that you can be outside of the universe and irresponsible, which is a kind of narcissistic psychopathology, saying that you can observe the universe and are not involved. It's like playing God without having the consequences. And so in the Copenhagen Convention, they should have turned that around, saying, no, we are integral part of it, and we need to take care of everything we think and everything we do for ourselves and to each other, also in interacting with the planet and all life forms, because we're integral part of it, because our radio wave information field is interwoven with all of these other radio wave information fields, because at the atomic level, there's just protons, neutrons, and electrons. That's the only show that we need to go a level deeper. So when we look at the four light fields of the body, you have your light fields, the universe has its light field, but when the drop in the ocean interact, there is the third light field, which is around, which is on that interface between you and the universe. That's where you tune into the universe and can yet be separate. It's like your dashboard in navigating in the quantum universe. And so those three quantum light fields, which are then associated with the quantum fields are associated with light fields. And these three light fields act on the material structure of the body. So they, in combination, reflect off the tetrions of the body and create a radiant field from the body by which you essentially communicate into the universe that you're there and what you're doing. So that is described in the story of the four light fields of the body. And with that understanding in place, we can see that that also operates at the level of the first cell of the body. It is embedded in the quantum field. It has its own quantum field. It interacts in the environment via an interactive quantum field. And these fields act on the materials of the cells, producing a radiant field. So all of these cells produce a radiant field. All of the atoms produce radiant fields. All of the molecules produce radiant fields. All of the materials produce radiant fields. And in the body, at these four levels, everything interacts. Now we have to come to a deeper understanding of how it can be that this first cell, after it has divided, it's a like unzipping, like a zip file. You have the zip file, the zygote, you unzip it, and the whole body is unfolded out of that. Essentially, that can happen because in that zip file, there is a handle called the DNA, and the DNA, as Peter Garayev said, projects this holographic field around us. And as a result, the radiant fields of all of the particles can follow the guideline of that projected hologram image of the DNA. And as a result, the cell knows where to go. And they can form the body as a consequence of that. Robert Becker found the same when he was looking at the electromagnetic field of the salamander. And when he looked at the egg of the salamander, he measured that it already had the shape of the salamander around it, so that it was already projecting its future shape, even though it was still just one single cell. That's also what Jaap van der Waal says, how we need to understand the zygote as a hologram. And that's what Peter Garayev said, the DNA projects the integral image already. And Peter Marshall already had a lot of understanding, which he presented to people to be able to think in that manner. And so his thoughts are really important in grasping what's being told here now. So, of course, there needs to be a consideration to be added to this, because the people who pretend that consciousness comes from matter and that it is the physical that creates capacity to think. That's good to think if you want to produce computers. But in reality, that's not so. Bruce Lipton and others have shown that it is the information field of the organism which builds the DNA. So it's not the DNA that builds the organism, but it's the light field of the organism that builds the DNA. So Hans von Rickewig, James Oshban, Ivan Pavlov, and Bruce Lipton all say the same. Hans von Rickewig says there is this sensory experience we have of the environment, which we build into the body, into the organs, and into the cells, and that goes into the DNA. He cannot be more specific about it, but he is much connected to what Steiner had written. His brother was doing the work in the homeopathy, so he understood information fields very well. Now we have a deeper knowledge to that. James Oshman, for example, said exactly the same, but he connected it to electromagnetic frequencies. So in the environment, we have the electromagnetic frequencies. They are then absorbed by the sensory system into the body. All of these cells selectively respond to vibrations in on the surface of the body. They take that in from the cell to the neuron, to the plexus, to the brain, and in other ways into the body. And so the body filters that information, the organs filter that information, the cell filters that information, then goes into the DNA and it's compatible and computable, and or it is not. If it is not, it will crack up the DNA, and basically that's the way that the organism erases itself from the story. That people are living incompatible or incommensurable experiences, so they better be removed from the story. Or what they do fills in, blends in with what the DNA is doing, and then it stabilizes that or enhances that. Or more crucially, there are new experiences which can then be built into the DNA. And Pavlov looked for the way that that happens at the physiological level, not the electromagnetic of James Oshman, and not the information level of Hans von Rekeweg, but at the physiological level, what we take in goes into the body, and the tongue already knows how it was going to be processed, for the simple reason that what we smell creates a molecular association on the nasal plane. On the tongue, it samples a molecular dissociation. So the organs already know how to digest it. And so Pavlov then looked at the way food changes the way the digestive organs activate. So for example, in us, if we eat starches, the stomach needs to be non-acidic. If we eat proteins, the stomach needs to be acidic. And that calibration is very active, very precise, works on the organs, works on the cells, and then of course, as a result, determines what happens at the DNA level. Bruce Lipton then takes that at the fourth level and talks about the sensory protein, the portal protein, the linking protein, the DNA mantle protein. Sensory protein, like an antenna on the surface of the body, knows what vibrations are coming. Portal protein in the membrane of the cell can then sample, take in or release the molecules from the environment. The linking protein puts the connects the information from the sensory protein to the portal protein, so it helps to make it possible to decide when to open the gate and when to close it, what to let in, what to let out. And as a result, the DNA mantle protein can then add new information to the DNA. And over the billions of years, the amino acid became the protein, became the RNA, became the DNA, and became that projector that Peter Gareyev talks about, that then already has the image of how the first cell is going to unfold. Okay, so we needed to have all this in place, because from then on we can look further and see that in that transition from the cell replication, the cell goes from the material to the molecular to the atomic into phase space. In phase space, it does exactly the same as what happens at the leading edge of the ray of light of Einstein. As Tetrionics explains, that's not just where you have the end point or the beginning point, but that's where you have the zero point, where the wave envelope can turn inside out on itself. And this is where I need to add a simplistic picture, which is that of the relationship between the wave train, the wave envelope, and the soliton. Because in the way these waves connect, and as Tetrionics points out, Einstein looked at the waves, Planck looked at the wave nodes. Einstein, in a way, had this event horizon, this light cone, but didn't make explicit that he was actually talking about the wave node at the end of the light ray. Planck did understand that, And where Einstein said, well, okay, this is where it stops and we cannot go faster than the speed of light. Planck said, well, actually we can, but we have to do a phase inversion where the electric wave and the magnetic wave of the light ray go to the zero point. We need to phase invert them. And we need to do the quantum leap. That only shows that the quantum leap is a phase inversion. And then waves can continue, and the wave envelopes can continue too. And with that understanding, connected to this principle of the soliton, the light ray as a whole is coherent because it has a beginning point, it has an end point, it has interconnection point in between, which are all stabilized and harmonized, calibrated, and put in place by these wave envelopes. But in that same way, we then have the relationship between the waves put in the wave trains in their metric, their very phase locked, phase stable, coherent metric of the wave envelopes. And when that is all the case, the wave as a whole operates as if a wave node. So that's called a soliton. And soliton is a wave which can replicate itself. For example, a smoke ring is a soliton wave, a vortex is a soliton wave, egg shape is a soliton wave. These are fundamental shapes in nature. Again, Lawrence Edwards described that in his book, The Vortex of Life. And once you understand that, you can see that all of these shapes are solitons. And with that understanding, we can now see that what happens in the wave nodes connecting the waves in the wave envelopes to form the soliton, that's also what happens in the zygote forming the body. So when the first cell unfolds, and we can simply say that the first wave does a phase inversion in phase space and creates a second wave. The first cell becomes two cells. And it has the first wave harmonic so that the internal cell cycle is now also a feed forward and feedback cycle connecting the two cells. And so then you also have the conservation of momentum, that the first cell and the second cell, they must have by principle complementary, also called dual wave cell cycles. Just as in the electromagnetic wave, if the electric wave goes up in the one wave node, it needs to go down in the other wave node, comes back up, and so on. So in that same way, the first cell rotates one direction, the first and the second cell will have opposite rotations, but the first cell had rotation one direction only, so there must be an extra rotation coming in to cancel the new rotation, and that's what the feed-forward feedback loop essentially does. So a lot of calculation is needed if you do that in say wave mechanics or sinus function kind of mathematics, because you need to see that every electron, every molecule, every bit of matter will have to be included into this calculation of the preservation of momentum. But the law of preservation of momentum must apply. So if there is a specific momentum before cell replication, then that must be preserved after cell replication. Not just that, it must be preserved after all of the next cell replications, it must be preserved in the body as the whole. So the body as the whole is actually an unfolded hologram projection of the first cell, but the preservation of momentum applies to both equally. Coming back to that notion of the wave train, the wave envelopes, and the soliton, the soliton is doing exactly the same as the wave nodes. And between the wave nodes, the wave can unfold. The cells are doing the same. The first cell is that node. it goes through its zero point transition, creates a new node, and then all of them build that whole wave train, which we call the body, as a soliton, which we call our health. So in order to be able to work with that, we need to have the understanding that what happens at the cellular level of the zygote must work at the level of the body as a whole as well. The laws of preservation of momentum are clear, that they need to work at every level, and the principles of science are clear. The physics is based on the chemistry, which is based on the electromagnetics, actually the electron changes, which is based on quantum changes. As Tetrionics explains, that's in the quantum field. So when all of that falls in place, it is evident that the material, the molecular, the atomic, and the subatomic are interlinked at the quantum space. This is subatomic. And that we must look at them in as one system. And that is what I call the zipper of manifestation. The way most people would understand that is that you have a photon leap, which is between atoms. That can cause an electron leap within an atom. That then can cause an electron oscillation between juxtaposed atoms. And that then can create electron bonding, turning them, fixing them, the atoms. And if you look at it in a more blunt sense, in the sense of alchemy, or in the sense of what I call transmaterialism, then the photon leap is outside of the material, and that is taking place in quantum space. The electron leap takes place in the atomic. The electron oscillation means that we are working at the level of the molecular. The electron bonding means that we are now working at the level of the material. So the zipper of manifestation, which is exactly the same principle of that, of the wave train, the wave envelope, and the soliton, but simply looked at in a different manner, is that the photon change is in quantum field, the electron leap is in the atomic field, the electron oscillation is in the molecular field, and the electron bonding is in the physical field. Differently put, the photon leap is in quantum holography space, the electron leap as at the level of quantum mechanics, the atomics. The electron oscillation is in the level of the molecular, which is chemistry. And the electron bonding is at the level of materials, which is physics. That means that physics, which is described by classical science, molecules, which is described by relativity theory, atoms, specifically electron leaps in atoms, which is described by quantum mechanics, needs to be connected to quantum holography, which we can better call tetrionics. But it also means exactly what the alchemist said, that the quantum field, the atomic field, the molecular field, and the material field are same. They're identical. They should not be put apart as in classical physics versus relativity theory versus quantum theory, quantum mechanical theory versus tetrionics, or which used to be called unified field theory when it didn't have the grammar yet. And instead of it, we simply need to realize that the universe is an electromagnetic vibration. At the atomic level, it is the electron leaps which will determine how the protons and the neutrons can aggregate and form atoms, and with their radiative field interconnect with each other. Once the interconnections start to take place and molecules are formed, then the electron oscillation in the atom becomes an electron oscillation between atoms. Actually, if you look at it in more detail, you would see that there is an electron going from inside to outside in the one atom, and then at the same time an electron going from the outside to the inside in the other atom, which on the outside seems as if there is an electron moving from the one atom to the other. And in the material, you don't see an oscillation, but you just see it as a kind of square dance, keeping on going and keeping that movement in place. To put it differently, at the atomic level, you see that there's an electron leap. At the molecular levels, you see there's an electron flow. And in the material level, you see that there's an electron bonding, an electron storing or stocking of electrons. Cybernetics have given a wonderful understanding for this, thanks to system theory, Ludwig von Bertalanffy, gracias. So there you can see that there's a possibility to describe the quantum field, the atomic field, the molecular field, and the material field in terms of the switch, which is actually the quantum flip, the resistor, which is actually the electron moving from one position to the other, with of course its corresponding magnetic field changes. Then at the third level, you have the electron flow, which is then depicted as a coil. And then at the fourth level, the material level, you have the capacitor, which is where the electron bonding takes place. At the level of deeper understanding, you can then see that the material with the bound electrons is what we call space. That's where classical theory operates. The molecular, where the electrons flow, is the domain of time, described by relativity theory. In the atomic level of the electron leaps, that's where we are dealing with energy, which quantum mechanics tries to look at. But at the deepest level, where all comes from, is the phase field and the changes in the phase field, which is what unified field theory tried to describe and what Tetrionis now has given the logic for. So the switch, the resistor, the coil, and the capacitor are the equivalent of information, energy, time, and space. And coming back to the first cell in the body, the zygote is exactly that. So at one level, it is material. At a deeper level, it is molecular. At a still deeper level, it's atomic. At the deepest level, it is a resonator in phase space. And just to make it a bit more interesting for those who have a deeper insight, the fundamental notation of tetrionics, of the tetrionic quantum, is actually a short circuit radio circuit. So it has the qualities of the resistor, the coil, and the capacitor, and the switch is what happens when you flip the quantum from one side to the other. So this notation of radio diagram elements, radio diagram circuit elements, of the switch, the resistor, the coil, and the capacitor, is actually right in the core of tetrionics. And we need that because when we look at the zygote in that sense, the material is what is then corresponding with the capacitor function, the storage of electrons. The molecular is coordinated, related to that coil function, the flow of electrons. The atomic is where we have the electron leaps, which is the energy. And at the deepest level, it's all about the information, but we need to look at this in a different manner because we're still trying to explain how can it be that the first cell after it divides can keep on keeping the solitone coherence for a century or more. And that is in the way that the bound electrons in matter, they basically can move in and out, that's it. But once they are out, they are part of the electron circuit in the molecules. So they are now part of a linear dynamic. But that dynamic is based on what happens in the electron clouds in the atoms, which is in a plane of calibration of potentials. But that takes place within the volume of the quantum phase space. So all of this takes place in four dimensions. And the physical terminology is usual that we are looking at space as three-dimensional time, which is a time loop or a time cycle, which is a circle, is then by definition two-dimensional. Energy, the atom leap, the atom electron jump, is one-dimensional. And then the photon chain is basically the quantum chain turning inside out on itself, is zero-dimensional. So when we juxtapose the descriptions of science, then we would say that the classical science is about the three-dimensional dynamic of materials. Relativity theory is about the two-dimensional time cycles. That's actually what the Minkowski mathematics is about in the Einstein notation, so that these time cycles are two-dimensional. Max Planck looked at the electron jump, which is one-dimensional, and then you would see that the quantum flip in phase space is actually zero-dimensional, as Tatrioni so nicely describes. But that's the counterpart, and that's just the physical part. That's tetrions, which are inert, being moved by the electromagnetic field, and then they can create the atoms, they can create molecules, they can create the materials. But we need to understand that these materials are embedded in the chemical dynamic, which are the result of the electromagnetic changes, which are originated from the quantum field. And that is precisely what we see in our body. We see that the physical is what we call the anatomy, the chemical we call the physiology, and the electromagnetic, doctors don't really understand that neurocrinology is the electromagnetic, and thus it operates at the atomic level, and it orchestrates the sing-song, the harmony, the symphony at the atomic level. That's where homeopathy realizes that the spectral quality of the molecules is more important than the molecules itself. And that's where acupuncture realizes that the phase organization is more important than the physiological and cellular cycles themselves. So once you see that the anatomy comes from the physiology, which comes from the neurocrinology, and then you still need to take the last step and go to the immaterial, which we need to call the psychology, which actually is the domain of consciousness, which is the radio information field which underlies all of these electron movements in the body. And then you realize that everything comes from the quantum field. So the quantum field is this hologram, which then orchestrates the movement of the electrons throughout the whole body, which then creates the electron currents, which we then see as the physiology, and that determines where the molecules are positioned as the materialization of the body and the anatomy. That is also already understood in the work of Björg Nordström. He looked at the electrical flows in the body and realized that some of them were of the quality of energy, that they needed to move electrons to have the currents to change the materialization. But the other part was the information flow, which is the radio information field, which is the voltage potentials, nothing to do with moving electrons, purely the electromagnetic hologram field, which determines how the information is orchestrated. That's our local light field. So with that understanding, he then called it the infonars for the information side and the ergonars for the energy side. But that, of course, is quite like he described. It goes throughout the lymph duct, it goes throughout the arteries and arterioles and everything. Everything in the body is an electric conductor. But there's more to it, because on the one hand, all of the cells produce body materials which are responsive to these changes in the electromagnetic radio information field. So they are piezoelectric, they are liquid crystal, they are the transducer transponders. and their intelligent gels. Those are the body materials, which are then positioned, very precisely positioned for the optimization of cell communication. But there is also the complement of that, the proteins which are physical, the enzymes which are chemical, the hormones which are electromagnetic, the pigments which operate in phase space, light space. So that there too we can see that space, time, energy and consciousness are totally interconnected. And that possibility of the cells to create these body materials, which are filtering the electromagnetic radio information flow and making it possible for the body to selectively respond to quantum field changes, then complements the hormones, enzymes, the proteins, hormones, proteins, enzymes, hormones, and pigments in the physics, the chemistry, the electromagnetics, and the photonics of the body, so that the cell communication can take place at that level. And with Hank Coy in this series of Mathemusics, we then looked at how all of these electromagnetic dynamics, which we cannot see, and the photon dynamics, which we cannot discern, connect to the material dynamics, which where we cannot tell things apart. We can, however, then see it in the phonon dynamics of the sound waves in the body. So Mathemusics looks at the cell cycles, understood as notes in the symphony, so that all of these notes interact. And when two notes interact, you have an overtone and a ground tone. So there's four notes playing together, and these notes together weave the rhythms in the body, and that is what is needed to go to the understanding of the body as a Cooper pair cell complex. Because when the cells divide, these two cells are like two notes in the symphony, but they have this feed forward and feedback loop, which is, say, the ground tone, but they also have the overtone, which is that all of these cells need to have their bounds back in the quantum zero-point field. So all of these cells, in whatever they do, every time that they divide, they connect in that quantum field, because that's where the zero-point transition takes place. But that quantum field is the hologram, that's one of these four light fields. And so that hologram then interfaces with what happens in the universe. What happens in the universe is the second, the first field. And that interaction with the universe is what I previously called the third field. And these fields together then bounce back onto what body materials will do, that fourth field, as I described it before. All of these work with that principle of the zipper of manifestation, a quantum photon leap, electron leap, electron oscillation, electron bonding. But that's precisely the same as the principle of laser. In laser, you have a spark. You park a mirror on one side of it as a whole wavelength distance from that spark. Then that spark will be reflected, come back to the place where the spark originated. If you have a continuous source of sparks, those sparks will coincide. Put mirror at the other side of that spark, and then you can have a wavelength between the spark and the mirror again. So you can create a standing wave on the one side and on the other side. But at that moment that you calibrate that really well, then the mirror with the spark in the middle, with the mirror on the other side, they can double the wavelength and create a wave envelope. And that's why the spark being reflected in the mirrors then can become a soliton, and as a result can escape out of that prison of the mirrors of the laser device. And that is also, I mentioned that earlier, that transition from local knowing to non-local knowing, from Jesus consciousness to Christ consciousness, from the knowledge in the body to the knowledge or the ability to gather knowledge outside of the body. So our cells do that too. And that principle of the spark, the mirror on the one side, the mirror on the other side, and the doubling of the wavelength is exactly the principle by which the first cell then doubles and can unfold that hologram in the way that Peter Gareyev proposed, that from then on, every next cell division is part of that same dynamic. And that means that we really need to think very differently about the whole principle of cell replication, because it is not the cellular material dynamic which medical doctors and biologists look at. That's what happens at the physical level. But that only has meaning if you understand that the anatomy is based on the physiology. So you need to look at how the physics comes from the chemistry. That means that you have to go to cellular biology. Actually, you have to include the whole principle of the immune system, because the immune system is outside of the cells, what that cellular physiology is inside of the cells. And that's where you then come to the understanding that what we know about the body is far too limited. Now, we don't have enough information about these molecular dynamics in the process of cell replication, because we actually don't have enough knowledge of what happens in these molecular processes, how these molecules are formed in the cells at the deeper level. And when you look at that deeper level, then you can see that everything that happens in the cell must be based on that. In the same way that the anatomy is based on the physiology, so the material is based on the molecular, but the molecular comes from the atomic, and the physiology is based on the neurocrine, which is also the immune system, which is the electromagnetic system. And at that level, it is evident that all of the cells work with atomic nuclear processes. There are atomic nuclear forces at work there. But then it turns out that what quantum mechanical physics describes at that level is incomplete, because it can look at where the particles jump, but it doesn't look at what the electromagnetic gradient was which made the particles jump. So we need to go to a deeper level, and then we can see that in the cell, the cells do not work with atomic nuclear forces, but they work with tetrionic quantum flux dynamics. Cells are able to transform molecules, which means that they are able to work with atomic nuclear forces, but they do not work with atomic nuclear forces. Instead, as tetrionic says, they work with linear quantum flux and circular or rotational quantum flux. With the linear quantum flux, they can slice and splice molecule fragments up to the atomics. And with the rotational quantum flux, they can reposition them. So at the deeper level of the cell, again, we are looking from the material side of the cell. We went into the molecular side of the cell. We are now at the atomic level of the cell. But we see that the atomic level of the cell is consequential to what happens in the quantum dynamics of the cell. So that's where we then see that it is a holographic field. That's same as the wave envelopes for the wave trains and all that. The soliton determining the wave nodes in the wave train. Then we can see that in the cells, the fundamental process that drives the whole cell is in quantum space. From quantum space, it is the information field in four dimensions, which then creates the context, the field gradients by which the electrons can move in the atoms, and that is orchestrated throughout the whole body. So this is not understandable from the point of view of particular physics as came out of this Copenhagen Convention. This can only be understood as part of quantum holography, as the whole purpose was of creating the Copenhagen Convention. That's where we had to go at that time. That was evident. So somebody got bribed or whatever. And so everybody got lost for a century or so. But back to the principle, it is the quantum holography, it's the hologram in quantum space, which then orchestrates the the linear and the rotational quantum flux at that fundamental level in the cells, not just within the cell, but within all of the cells. And this is where we really need to understand that, funny as it was with this whole concept of the barrier of light of Einstein, we need to know that in the edge of the barrier of light, we leave the light field and we enter into the quantum field. We leave probability and we enter into united consciousness. We go from Jesus consciousness to Christ consciousness. We go from material to immaterial. We go from mind to into soul. So when we go from the physical to the physical, then what happens in the cell is coordinated into what happens in every cell. And that is again coming back to the beginning of the body in the first cell. That is already implied in its hologram associated in the DNA, as described by Bruce Lipton and as described by Peter Gariev. That then unfolds the body using the zipper of manifestation. The seed unzips to form the whole tree of life. And out of that comes this dynamic of first the fractalization of division after division after division of the first cell. But then, as a consequence of that, the secondary system comes in that circulations can set up between those fractals. Then as the third, the integrative field can set up amongst those fractals. And that is actually described in the story of the parable of the Garden of Eden. The first part is the seed, which is the zygote. The second part is the tree of life, which is the vegetative system. The third part is the snake in the Garden of Eden, which is a circulatory system. And the fourth part is the apple in the tree, which is the involuting, revoluting electromagnetic field, same as the Van Allen belt around the Earth. And when you look back at the book of Lawrence Edwards with his Vortex of Life, and then you can see that this transition from seed to tree of life to the snake in the tree to the apple in the tree is actually what happens when you turn a line inside out on itself, and you get these vortex forms. Double vortex form is the shape of the apple. You get the torus. The torus form is the snake. And you get this fractal, which is the form of the tree of life. So the story of the tree of life in the Garden of Eden is actually this fractal unfoldment of the cell forming the body. First you have the cell, then the fractal process, then the recursing process, the loops of the circulatory system, and then the integration process, this apple of the electromagnetic unifying field, which has been described by Itzhak Bentov in his book Stalking the Wild Pendulum as what happens when the spinal cord connects. Gurdjieff talks about the Kunda buffer, because most people block it. In India, they use the word Kundalini when it is connected, and then the bottom and the top create this apple shape Van Allen belt like field around the body, integrating, unifying everything. And that's where you can then see that the body as a whole is that unfolded hologram, which is already implied in the zygote. And so that brings me to the end of this story, which is actually the beginning of all of the research, because the story simply shows that the first cell, by this principle of the zipper of manifestation, which is this principle of the laser will have that unfolding of the first cell as it forms the wave, and then forms the wave trains, and then forms the wave envelopes, and then forms the soliton, that these cells, by their connectedness in the material, on the basis of the connectedness in the chemical, the electron flows, on the with their law of conservation fully applying at that level too, and then based on these electron leaps, which are all orchestrated throughout the body by that underlying quantum field, then it is evident that the body can unfold from the one cell to the 30 trillion cells that form our body, because that information field is already there and present. It just follows the information field from the point to the line, which is the fractal, to the plane, which is the circle of the internal circulation, to the volume, which is the unfolded fractal, the hologram. Same as we see in the sensory system, from the sensory system, the sensory cell, which is a point, which generates a Dirac pulse, then into the neurons, a line, which operates a Fourier code in time space, and then into the neural plexus, which operates a Moiré array in the energy domain, and then it goes into the brain, a Gabor hologram, three-dimensional, which is the information integration. So that then is the key to understanding how the cell and the body are one whole, and why we can use that understanding of the Cooper pair as a core concept. Because the first cell, when it divides, it forms a Cooper pair. It is two parts of the same vortex. All of the cells which come out of that are again Cooper pair. They are all interlocked, phase locked, and interlinked. And so by the laws of preservation of momentum, you must calculate that all of them are part of the same momentum. And that, of course, means that the momentum in phase space will then determine the momentum in the atomic domain of the electron leaps, which then determines the momentum in the molecular domain with the electron flows, which then determines the momentum and the stored momentum in the electron storage, the bound electrons. And that makes this idea of the Cooper pair cell complex so fascinating, because when you understand it at the core, it's utterly simple. It is one cell which in a vortex dynamics pulls back from space through time, through energy into phase space, and then comes back in energy for the atomic, in time of the molecules, into structure of space for the material. And then you can see that this zipper of manifestation needs to take into account how the electrons are bound in the material, because they were already part of a flow in the molecular, because they were already part of an electron limb in the atomic, because they responded to a change in the phase space in quantum, at tetrahedral quantum phase space. So let me then bring this to a close. The Cooper pair principle simply makes explicit that the first cell, when it divides, creates a Cooper pair, because by the law of conservation of momentum, that's required. And then that continues for all of the further cell replications. It also means that all of these self-replications, all of these Cooper pairs, are phase-locked in phase space, and that the unfolding of it all is essentially an application of the laws of preservation of conservation of momentum and all the conservation laws. But they need to connect the physical with the chemical, the molecular, the physiology, which needs to connect to the electromagnetic, the atomic, the transformations, which need to connect to the information in phase space, which is the tetrionic quantum changes. So welcome to this new understanding of the Cooper pair cell complexes. Once you grasp the idea, you can see how stunningly simple it is. Because as in the laser principle, you have a spark, you have a mirror, you have another mirror, and you phase attune them so that the wavelength become a double wavelength and become a soliton. Likewise, the first cell, you double it, and then you wave phase attune it, and then that keeps on going and keep the soliton principle going. That soliton unfolds as far as the DNA has been developed. And so whatever you add as new experiences into the DNA will be creating a new potential for the sequel developments of our life form and all life forms. So welcome to your participation in creation, because in tuning, in playing with this transition of the cell replication, that's where we connect it to consciousness, as Hans van Reykjavik, James Oshman, Ivan Pavlov and Bruce Lipton said, that is where you add the new information into the body so that others can build up on that. Have fun.